Welcome to Speak Sex. I'm your host, Eve Eurydice. It is springtime in Miami and I'm thinking about gender. Today's guest is Frankie G. She is a writer, published poet, scholar. She has a master's in literature. She's here in South Florida, a born Floridian. Welcome to the show, Frankie.
Thank you.
The reason I've invited you is that, you know, you and I recently had a conversation about your transition journey. And I thought it was definitely worth, you know, repeating and recording because it resonates with my kind of long-held feelings and thoughts and, you know, ideas about what's happening with, you know, non-binary gender nowadays. So, yeah, let's start with, so last time, really, that you and I were in the same town and had spoken, you were, you know, very much in a queer space, you know, identifying as they, them, and you were going to move to Buffalo, New York, ideally take advantage of the, I guess,
resources.
Yeah.
Access to
basically, yeah, government covered, you know, I wanted to say free, but that's such a simplistic way, you know, hormone therapy and even
surgery,
yeah, or like whatever it is, Medicare.
Yes, yeah. Exactly, with great. Medicare.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. So yeah, so I'd love to hear how that went and what you discovered.
Yeah, so as you know, we spoke, I believe, in 2022, right?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
I was still in South Florida.
Mm-hmm.
Politically here, things were just seeming a lot more and more hostile. I had a partner that got into a program in Buffalo. I had visited and I really actually loved Buffalonians. And I said, is this a place where I can go through a transition? And that was what I kind of sought out to see when I was there, if I would have like the social support. Because I, as you know, us artists are very sensitive. So the weight of what I was going through, it's not easy. Any binary trans person will tell you that you do it because of the love for who you are and the kind of affirmation you want to receive, and also because it's the dysphoria, right? Like kind of, and for me, as I was there in Buffalo at that point, you know, I was just socially transitioned. I, like you said, I was just going by they, them. Obviously, like, you know, whatever, I dressed more, gender fluid, right? But people, your everyday person, your non-queer person, who doesn't really understand, gender in the same way us queer people do, would identify me as a woman.
How long were you by then dysphoric? How long? How many years had you felt that you weren't sure about your gender identity, your birth gender?
Yeah. I would say from 2019. Well, okay, let's start from the beginning. As an adolescent, as soon as I started getting curvy, it wasn't a dysphoric of like, it was kind of like I was alerted to the fact that I was uncomfortable with being a woman.
Yeah. But you know, I'm going to interrupt again.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think that we have ignored as a society the fact that this is the new norm. You know, like for thousands and thousands and thousands of years, women had a job, right? So first of all, you didn't have a choice. Very few, like the ones who did make a choice, like, you know, Joan of Arc famously or whatever, you know, paid a huge price. But basically being a woman was clearly, you know, having babies and being domesticated.
Yes.
So all of a sudden we got a choice, like sometime in the 20th century, depending on like where you were born.
Mm-hmm.
And so we also got like a full and, you know, education, which again was a very recent development, you know, like
that's true.
My grandmother Eurydice was not allowed to go past third grade, and this was mm-hmm. one of her complaints. And my own mother, like, she wanted to become a teacher and she was not allowed, so she graduated high school but then had to get married, you know what I mean?
Correct.
This kind of like we look at like exceptions, like, I don't know, Jane Austen, you know, the daughters of like pastors in
Virginia Woolf,
right? Yeah. Wealthy places, like yes. you know, in the Empire in England, you know. But really, yes. the vast majority of women in the West were still like the ones, you know, they weren't even allowed an education. So basically, our mm-hmm. our minds did not identify as masculine so much, you know, because our education was like among other women. So you know, they told us like there was a lot of like that kind of natural teaching. You know, like how to do spells, or how to say, you know, how to say prayers, or how to chant something, mm-hmm. or how to read the weather patterns, or how to, you know, cast away the evil eye, or I don't know.
Yes, exactly. How to dance, whatever.
Right. All of that stuff, that the incantatory, you know, stuff that was like outside the realm of like masculine culture.
Yes.
So I think it's very recent that, you know, that women have been educated just pretty much the same way as men.
Mm-hmm.
And I think mm-hmm. that the effect of this has been this gender dysphoria. I mean, I felt it very strongly, because as an adolescent, I mean.
Yes, exactly.
Because I was, you know, I was taught as a boy, and as if I were a boy, you know, the same way as boys. And my dad, because I was like precocious, you know, and smart, mm-hmm. like he would treat me as his son, and he'd be like, let's go on an adventure, leave the women and children behind, you know. He would take me on all his excursions and with his buddies, mm-hmm. and so basically I didn't really understand what was going on when I started, like you said, you know, sprouting curves. Like it was such a shock, because my mind identified me as an average boy, you know.
Exactly.
And then like overnight, my value in the world, such as it was, you know, was like only like getting good grades, mm-hmm. mm-hmm. and making like, you know, my dad proud, because like I could recite Homer by heart, mm-hmm. you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And mm-hmm. suddenly, like without my consent, you know, my body changed, mm-hmm. and it was attracting attention away from
unwanted.
My mind.
Unwanted. Yes,
exactly. Away from my mind that I had worked hard. I mean,
very
I had
hard.
Really right, yeah, like night after night writing essays.
Mm-hmm.
Showing off my you know, like intellectual capacity,
yes.
And then all of a sudden, you know, I'm turned into like a sexy bimbo, like,
yes,
you know, and I walk down the street and kind of like creepy guys are hooting and hollering and catcalling
and following you
and showing them, exposing themselves, like in the dark, in the park,
yes.
And you're like, I don't identify with this person. These people are seeing.
Yes.
Whoever, whatever
Make
they're seeing.
Go away.
Yeah, it's not me. That's not who I am. Like, dudes.
Yeah.
You're mistaken.
Yes.
So it created this like alienation from our body, mm-hmm. that I think like previous, you know, all the previous generations didn't have, because women weren't so, you know, they weren't kind of like trained and expecting to have this masculine thinking, you know.
Yes.
And
that's so true for me
anyway, like, just wanted, you know, it suddenly made no sense to me, you know,
mm-hmm.
So that was on the island of Crete, in the town of Heraklion, on the island of Crete, you know, back in the, I don't know when it was, 70s 80s 70s 80s, maybe, I don't know, in 80s, but the point is 70s anyway,
80s.
That I was you know, I decided I would be a boy, so I refused to wear skirts, even to church, which made my parents irate, right?
Oof.
I only wore pants. I would bind my breasts secretly,
yes.
and they hurt. All night, I would sleep in pain, because I didn't want them to grow. I wore, like, you know, like baseball hats from, like, companies that sold tractors. And I wore, like, huge T-shirts also,
yes.
from, like, macho, you know, macho occupations, you know, like,
yes,
to identify, like, with, like, really hardcore masculinity.
I'm a boy,
I'm a boy, please, yeah. And then I would wear, I took a knife, like twice the police stopped me and took it away because I would carry a knife, trying to make myself basically to these people.
Yes, tough.
You know, to these people who were like constantly like looking at me as loot, you know, mm-hmm. that, no. Mm-hmm. And I took a boy name. I called myself Nick Zorba.
So I love it.
I know, I had written a play. I wrote a play about the uprising against the junta, and the main character was Nick, and I played the part, and the play was very successful, right? So suddenly, like, kids in my school and out in the street from nearby schools that had seen the production started yes. calling me Nick, who didn't know me. Hey, Nick. So I was like, whoa, this is great.
I love.
I'm holding on to this.
Yes.
And then I was like, that's who I am. I'm like Nick, and then Zorba the Greek, right? Like,
yes, I love that. I love Zorba.
So I would write it all over my shoes, my clothes, you know, this name.
Oh my, you were rebranding yourself.
I cut off my hair. So I had like boy hair.
Yes.
And
oh my God.
I put, you know, I wore glasses. Like all, I did everything I could. And, you know, I would wear this like kind of strict watch, no jewelry ever, no makeup, of course, ever.
Yes.
And I even shaved my face for like some months. Nothing happened. But like, I thought maybe I'll grow a beard.
You're trying.
Yeah. Secretly, you know, all of this yes. secretly. Like, I didn't want my mom to find out I was going nuts.
yes, because then you're crazy.
Yeah,
right?
but my point is, you know, that was a very clear kind of, you know, resistance to what was happening naturally in my body, because
yes.
the gender that I was taking on was not, mm-hmm. the, you know, was not like the dominant gender. Like,
exactly.
You know, I didn't want to be a weak person like my mom. My mom, like, never drove a car, never had a bank account, never had a job, never had a life outside being a wife and mother, stay at home, right? Nothing.
Mm-hmm.
So that being the role model, you're like, wait, I have thoughts and ambitions. I don't
yes.
want to be, like, passed on to a husband, you know, from my dad. And mm-hmm. what?
But, I want more for myself.
Right. So I think that we are in a moment that is so different.
Yes.
You know, historically speaking, when you look at the millennia behind us, that was repetitive, yes. you know, that these things happen pretty much culturally as a result of all this cultural change, you know. And at the time, if I had access, you know, I would 100% have said, yes, I'm changing.
You know? It literally sounds like you were a they, as Nick Zorba, you know?
Nick Zorba was ready. If someone said, yes. like, there are these pills that you can take and your breasts will stop growing and your butt will
yes.
stop, I'd be like, yes.
You would yes. sign me up.
I know. And the beard. Like, I want
yes.
the beard. And honestly, you know, like, I mean, I'm going to stop because it's your story and I've taken over your interview.
No, it's okay. I love it. No, we're exchanging.
But you know, for me, at a slightly later stage, as I got used to, you know, my body and I, you know, started feeling my hormones and stuff, mm-hmm. I think I decided that I could use it. But even that was very alienated. You know, I was so
yes.
alienated from the sexy body, which I didn't
yes.
identify with, that I thought, oh, wait, you know, if all these people want it, then maybe I can, like, if I have value as a bride or a catch of some kind,
yes,
I can leave my dad and my home and be okay out in the world, you know. And that kind of became my, you know, my key, let's say, my magical mm-hmm. key, you know, to get my dad to sign my emancipation papers and leave the country, you know, at 15 mm-hmm. and come to America. But the first time through all of that, all of those years, that whole life, you know, and that's why I wrote that book, you know, F32, about a
yes.
woman who gets separated from her vagina. And
yes.
she, and it has a life of its own. And she looks yes. at it as another, you know.
So yes.
that was a very real experience that I kept,
yes.
you know, I am not my body. You know, I am not, you know, I am not who I am. Like that,
yes.
that kind of sense.
You're already having a disconnect yeah, and your own dysphoria. With...
Right. I mean, I wrote yes. that book at 21, you know, trying kind of like to understand what it means to be a woman in, you know, in this moment where we're kind of like
yes.
in that transition. And the first time, this is the last thing I'll say, but the first mm-hmm. time that my body made sense to me and my gender made sense to me and I got it, you know, I made sense to
yes.
me was when I was pregnant. And then I was like, oh, oh, that's why. When I breastfed, I understood like my breasts, and you know, and when I gave birth, I understood my whole situation.
Yes.
My whole physical embodied difference, you know. Mm-hmm. But anyway, so that was a huge parenthesis, and let's go back to Buffalo.
No, thank you.
Buffalo, New York.
Yes, let's go to Buffalo. But also, I just want to say that I don't think you were like hogging the spotlight at all, because I think it's so important for me to know that you understand this too in your own way, for me to open up with my own resonances and differences. So I really appreciate that you I have a frame to synthesize, you know. So I thank you for sharing about Nick Zorba and then also pregnancy. I think me becoming a parent, and so those are two interesting things, because for me, you know, there was a moment that I was like, oh, you know, because of what we see, I think the key here is this thing, is that we both in common found that we hated the dominant, kind of like the oppressed, the trope that we see everyone reenacting, which is of the like the woman who has to labor so hard to be a woman, and the woman who you know, you have to get up at 5 a.m. to do your makeup in order to be considered a woman, the woman who has to make everyone smile and do 20 things at the same time in order to show up to, you know, anything, a job, while I'm job interviewing, I'm also cooking in the kitchen, and I'm also feeding the child, and I'm also making sure I don't eat because I can't have extra calories because I have to be attractive for everybody. So I think the image of that woman, just in both of our time periods, I was, you know, coming of age in the early aughts. So a woman, the women that we came in contact with were either hyper working, like my mom was very unavailable as a woman, as a mother, because she, you know, she was still going to school when she was pregnant with my sister. Then she had to work, you know, so I was raised by, you know, like strangers, like not even my grandma. Well, I had my grandmother. I'm kidding. But like every day in and day out, my grandmother was also working, you know, so I was just like, where are these women that are supposedly, they love me, but I don't see them at all, you know? And I'm just under the thrust of the discipline of my dad, you know, and getting his attention. If I get my dad's attention, then I'll get my mom's attention, you know?
Right. Yeah. And yeah. Yeah. Same thing. I mean, that was the same for me too.
Yeah. Whenever, if my dad was happy with me, then my mom would be, right.
Yeah.
Yes, she was a good mom. She would be considered a good mom.
Yeah, because everyone in the house is supposed to please the dad ultimately.
Yes, yes. So, anyway, so
yeah,
yes, yes. Anyway, it's not to. I love my father, and I love that he provided. But again, like these systems, they have their they had their giant blind spots, because right. Historically, all of these things. And so, when I went to Buffalo, I was just. I really loved the community there, the intellectual community there, because there was just so many independent bookstores, and all the artists, you know, people were more leftist minded, which is just more collectivist minded, right? Everyone just wanted to support each other in their art and support each other in their thinking and support each other in their transition. I was like, oh my God, this is so. And so it was basically, it felt like it was very gritty in some ways, right? It's very blue collar, but it's also very intellectual. It has this paradox that a lot of progressives have been able to make headway. I don't know if you remember when, now I'm forgetting her name, but she was like, she's a Black lesbian that she almost won the mayoral seat in Buffalo, and now I'm shame on me for not remembering. But Buffalo was the first city to have like a Starbucks union, for example. So it's just, it was very progressive, and UB at Buffalo also has a history of just being progressive, especially like in the 90s and the early aughts. I mean, there was just so much intellectual like there's a Derrida scholar, there was a lot, so many Marxists that are in the English department and in the comparative literature. And so it was, the state school had a lot of like Marxists and like even the gender studies department, sociology, they were very advanced. So I was very excited to be part of this like low-key scene, and I was like, I'm ready. So I made a lot of my best friends were trans women.
Oh, hold really, on a second. India, yeah. Walton.
Yes, right? Yeah. India Walton,
yeah.
Thank you.
Okay, go ahead. Yeah.
I appreciate you.
So a lot of your best friends were
were trans women. And my two best friends were pan or bisexual. They call themselves Freudian bisexuals and trans women. Oh, this is cool. Mm-hmm. You kind of feel like me because I'm pan. And they were very, you know, very affirming of me being non-binary, and like I felt more male of center at the time, even though I didn't present it. But I loved hanging out with these girls, and I was just like, you know, like I actually like hanging out with women. This is another way to be a woman. Like, this is not the oppressed female. This is actually a trans woman is the most liberated female that I know of, outside of like our grandmothers and, you know, like our like these older matriarchs that we have, like someone has an adopted mother or grandmother that they just like look up to because she's like, you know, such an amazing feminist. Well, like both of my best friends were like the most beautiful women and the most interesting women. And I was, my own relationship to femininity, really, I had a more positive relationship to it at that point. My body, though, was still giving me a lot of pains every cycle. Like that would be a point of contention for me. Like every month, are you kidding me? I have to suffer every month. I have to bleed every month. And men don't have to go through that. Like, you can give me a hormone to, like,
yeah.
You know, it was just like,
yeah.
And you know, the breast tenderness, all of that, like lower back pain, I'm literally hemorrhaging like every month, and there's no way to stop it. Yeah, you can take birth control, but like, I don't know. I just, if I was going to put something in my body, I was going to make sure it was like worth it, because my body was so sensitive, and I was like physically not, I was going through my own ailments at the time. So I had to be very careful with my diet. I didn't know like what would upset my body, what wouldn't. But thank God that ended up being the blessing of this whole thing, because my body was in a place of like, it's like, okay, priorities here. Do you want a gender transition first, or do you want to take care of your liver? And it wasn't an easy choice to make, because like at first I'm just like, if someone stop, it feels like the pain of being a woman sometimes is almost greater than whatever other pains you have to deal with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If that makes any sense. Yeah. Like, it's the pain of being a woman, because not because being a woman is inherently painful. It's just that the society we live in doesn't accommodate.
Mm-hmm. No, that's true. Like, if you're going to be accomplished, you have to do it in, you know, masculine time, in the masculine workplace, and
mm-hmm.
you know, you have that expectation of your body as if it were, you know, a masculine body.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So I said, okay, let me make sure my body's strong enough, because after I do top surgery, I can't move, I can't do exercise, like upper body exercise, for 6 months.
Oh, wow.
Like, I won't be able to lift anything. So that was the first thing, because my best friend told me, like, she had helped several people transition.
Mm-hmm.
And she was just like, yeah, you have to make your peace with being in a bed for 6 months, mostly. And I was like, that sounded, for me, that was another source of anguish, because I'm a very, you know me, like,
yeah.
I like to be on the move.
Yeah.
I have a very, like, kinetic relationship to life.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was a moment of pause. I'm like, okay, so now I have to make sure my mental health is good enough and my physical health is good enough before doing top surgery. Okay, another obstacle, right? But those ended up being the blessings because I actually signed up for my top surgery. They gave me a date and everything. And I was like, okay, I have a date. Let me make sure. Okay. Things started falling into place. I was like, let me do my detox, my 3-month detox where I have to get my body strong enough and whatever. And so I came back to Florida because also for my mental health, like just not having any sun or like waiting through another winter, like until to strengthen myself didn't make sense to me. So I was like, okay, I'm going to do this part of the, this leg of the, you know, whatever this,
the transition,
like was, yes, yeah, the transition. Cause it felt like an Olympic thing. I was like, first I have to be in good enough shape. Like, you know, then, so I came back to Florida.
So were you on hormones at that stage?
I started taking testosterone. I was injecting myself and I was like, oh, this is, this isn't a pain. Like some people really hate injections, but I was just like, oh, it's just like a little shot in my thigh, like and I was starting to feel more, like honestly I was starting to feel more strong, you know, I was like, oh, like it's just on a physical level, like, oh, all of a sudden, like, you know, like you just start to feel more energy. So yeah, I had started that, but I when I was like, oh, I have to go back to Florida, then I was like, okay, I'm going to stop because my family is hostile to like any idea of me, you know,
transitioning.
Yeah. You know? And so I came to Florida and I did my detox and I was working with a woman, who's a traditional Persian medicine healer. And I don't know, just talking to her, and about, she was really telling me about like the role of Persian women and all this. I was like, I love this. I love being a woman, you know, like that's when it really started hitting me, like a more positive legacy or relationship or to femininity, with like combined with like what my friends, you know, just like the trans women that were my best friends in Buffalo. I was just, my relationship to femininity changed. And then at that point, when I was doing my detox, I was just like, my body stopped becoming a source of pain. Like literally, I was really, my
detox helped.
Yes, because my cycles started were better. I didn't want to chop off my boobs every month for a week. You know? And so I was like, oh, breasts are beautiful. They're not a source of pain. Like, you know, and I started really connecting with my body differently. And I even before the image of me pregnant was like, would make me gag. Like, I was like, oh no, that's like an alien, like growing in me. Like, I don't want that. And then all of a sudden when I had this, like more, I felt less pain and more health in my body, like a healthy female body. I was like, oh wow, like I would love to have children, you know. I would love to be a, you know, a home for a budding life. So,
and this literally took place in the 3 months.
So, and also my relationship to males changed as well. Like, you won't believe it, I started resenting them less. Because yeah, and so I think at the foundation, I was also seeing my analyst this whole time from 2022 till, you know, to present day. And she had told me, she was like, let's figure out she was trying to delay also my, not because she was being like anti-trans or anything like that. Because she said, there's so much going on for you right now. Let some things stabilize before, let something shift. Let something shift, and then let's keep revisiting this. It's not going to go away. She called me by, she used they, them pronouns for me as well. She was very careful, like so, like in her language, not to misgender me. But there came the day when I was finally like, no, like I want you to call, like use, refer to me as a woman. And I had, and we had our conversation, and she's like, of course, on even on an unconscious level, you hated being a woman because your mother, like what happened with your mother, and you have all these like just base associations of pain with being a woman. All of a sudden, you start having positive relationships from identifying as a woman. Like you love your body now. You resent the male figures less. So she said, now you have a new relationship to femininity. And she said that this is, of course, you had a negative relationship to being a woman when all everything. And then she said, but finally, now it's not society's definition of a woman, it's Frankie G's definition. And so it's yours. And that was my big pivot. That was the intervention that I needed, was I got to define what it is to be a woman outside of society, outside of whatever tropes, because it was authentic. I had an authentic relationship with my body, and in my with my history, you know. But I didn't mind being called being a actually, when I was a child, I hated being referred to as a child, like you said. Like I wanted to be, I was a woman, I was sophisticated. So it's funny. Yeah, when I was like 5, 6, 7, I would dress like a little woman, but not like sexualized, but like as if I was like some sophisticated, like yes, person. So I don't know, does
So was
that
it like a big decision? Like, did you have to tell your partner in Buffalo and your friends, and that was, and there was, I mean, that was easy, or did it feel
No,
like,
actually.
yeah, I imagine it's not easy, yeah, because it's an identity that you're kind of saying, well, you know, I'm not the person you knew, like, yeah.
Exactly. Well, like, so thank God we're not just our gender, and we're other things, right? But it was tough, you know, to tell my partner, my because for example, I sent my best friend a so this is my best friend, who is not a trans woman. He's just a not just, but he's a queer Nigerian American man. But we had called each other like GSFs. We were God sibling friends. So I felt a lot of also connection with this person. And he was all about being queer, 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 queer. Like he's like, oh, I'm just queer, I'm fluid, that's it. Like, and anyway, so I told him, hey, wanna be the best man at my wedding? And I meant by best man, I meant whatever, like I don't know. And he's like, okay, are you gonna wear a powder blue tux? And I was like, no, actually, I want to wear like a dress. And he was like, oh, you do? Like, really? And I was like, oh my God, am I not queer enough now because I want to wear a dress? And so I was like, yeah, well, you know, I look like a princess. Like I feel like royalty, and I just it feels right, it flows. And he was supportive, but at first there was just like that surprise and like, oh, we're not gonna wear matching powder blue tuxes at your wedding. And so there was a little destabilizing there with him actually. And with my trans girlfriends, they were like, you know, they understood. Once I told them, they were like, we just want you to be happy, you know. So, but they did, you know, they were surprised. And it's the thing with my partner was funny because I think I was like the gateway, like person gender that allowed this person to realize that they were like queer. So I don't know. So whatever. Like I made peace with all of that, but it wasn't easy because I did have social anxiety about telling my friend. There were another friend from here that hadn't seen me in quite a while was also using they them pronouns for me. I was like, well, actually, I'm using she her now. And she was like, oh, really? So it was more of like a point of like inquisitiveness, but yeah, it was still awkward a little bit. I still got anxious. I still got anxious.
Well,
So
I feel that the
yeah.
whole, the way that gender, like it, it's like almost every blessing is a curse. So yes, we have broken like the extreme, binary like monopolies of gender, but then in the process, right? So it's been good to kind of get out from like the enforced stereotypes.
Yes.
But then in the process, we have turned gender into like purely performative, so we have, because we have been able to break out of the performative aspects, we kind of haven't gone past that, to
Yes.
acknowledge like what is not, what is essential.
Yes.
And I think, it's still taboo, basically, to even to say that or to think that, because there is a, because we're in a transition as a society, right? So there is an assumption of bias, like only if you're biased will you say that there is an essential gender within us, And I think that like it's kind of like a very strict interpretation of what's happening, of the social transitioning that's happening at the same time, that people, more and more people, like kind of explore gender. There is an overall transition, and we have to, it would be nice, we don't have to do anything, but I would like to see us kind of like open up more space for all of that,
Yes. There.
less judgment and just more space.
Yes. It's more about authenticity. Like I think it's so discouraging for me sometimes, like in our social justice circles, when the whole point of social justice is to be happy and for there to be more love in in the world amongst people and in our systems of oppression. It's also to have a care ethic, and it like just wears me out. I know always when I'm making new connections, new acquaintances or whatever, I understand their authenticity, and their re own relationship to their own authenticity by how they respond, to like, oh, you can't be queer and want to get married. You can't be queer and I don't know, just like belonged to. There's just so many shoulds, even in our queer circles. Oh, like for example, the other day, oh yeah, you can't be I have these neighbors that are wonderful and gay, and they're like, oh, if you end up marrying a man, you lose all your queer points. And they're like, you can't be part of our club anymore. And I was like, excuse me?
It's gonna be like, now it's gonna be like a closed society.
Yes. Like I was like, how, like I don't know, I'm gonna be, I'm queer, like how I am, my relationship to women, the fact that you and I boys can be so close is because, dear neighbors, is because I'm queer too, and I get, you know, we can hang out and we can be in social spaces together. So what is this? Like, I don't like when people are policing based on performance. Like, you know, it's horrible. I think that's poison. I think it's absolute poison because that's what straight people do. You know, like
Right. And
the
also, like, again, turning it all into performance. To me, it's
Yes.
very, I no longer know what's authentic, because I can't see through all the layers of, of the performance to understand what's inside, this person, because it just becomes too removed, And I think, like, already, like, in our, moment in time where we're so emphasizing the visual because of social media, there is already an excessive kind of emphasis on performance or how you appear, on screen or to the eye. So, like, if to reach some sort of balance, we should have less of that, I feel, and not more of that. But, like,
I agree 100%. I think image, like just focusing on image again, that's what the dominant will tell us. Like it's how you appear. But how about let's you know, the intellectual, the emotional, all these things can be expressed at a different register if we, you know, if we had more phone calls, maybe. Like, I
Or
don't know. Yes,
podcasts,
more podcasts,
audio only.
exactly. Audio.
And the listener can, like, use their imagination,
Yes, make
just like,
someone talk instead of making them take a selfie, you know, like just voice.
I agree. I agree. And just, use the other senses. We have so many, right?
Yes.
And especially the sixth sense. But
Well, that one's a little harder to.
basically, but I'm definitely a proponent of, like, use all the senses, because that's the one thing that, like, AI, AGI cannot,
Yes.
imitate,
Yes.
cannot, like,
Yes.
replicate. So, like,
Yes.
lean into our superpower, And that's where, and that's like a power that is not, accessible to language. So,
Exactly.
going back to, like, this kind of, like, masculinized education that we're all trained on, this the sensual, especially the non-visual,
Yes.
sensual interactions are just outside that. They're just not regulated.
Yes, I love. I had my friend, my best friend in Buffalo. She said that, yeah, like the ocular, the image in our society. I don't know who she was critiquing. If she was critiquing, ironically, Lacan or for, I don't know who she. I think because of the image register is so. But I don't think she had a appropriate understanding. So I would critique her thing. But she was just saying that the emphasis that we put on, like for trans people, even right? Oh, to be trans, you have to pass as the other gender, and it's like, no, I'm trans. No matter what, like, you know, at any point, like, so that emphasis so much on externalizing what it means to be a woman instead, like, in a visual sense, instead of, oh, I feel as a woman, I like the activities that women do. So, like, I think that there's so much more liberty, and I think queer circles and also our queer community has realized like it doesn't matter if someone doesn't hasn't like transitioned on a physical level yet, you respect their transness, like you recognize it in language and you recognize it like yeah, just with how you talk to them and how you socialize with them. So
And I do, I do think that if we get out, I mean, there are some, like, minor things to iron out, in
Yes.
terms of, like, the public, the public square. But I do think that it's much better to always kind of be trans, you know, to be going, to be in between, you know,
that
the in between state.
Yes,
is always more authentic than kind of. But yeah,
and thank God, you know,
the politics of it, basically, you know, the politics of it are limited, you know.
Yes, I think one thing I didn't talk about was like how I was dying almost on some level, on an unconscious level, to be recognized on the visual register as not a woman, so that I could be, you know, I could be considered more queer in certain eyes, like get my name changed, all these external, to be seen by the state as like a trans person.
Right.
Because I had something to prove to that. Like, and it's like, it's not about that. Like that was the error. And that's why, like, I'm so grateful that I slowed down with my to form like a more spiritual relationship to my gender, to a more
and it's, you know, and also like, you know, kind of like find a better connection with nature, which I think you know is important, like somehow continue to acknowledge, you know, our natural heritage, our natural, you know, legacy, and our, you know,
yes,
that, you know, which again is an aspect that doesn't have language, so it's outside like the mainstream you know, discourse, and outside the education that we receive, and so it doesn't get, you know, equal footing.
You can't create. I mean, it's so funny because that's the power, right, of being like a poet or a writer, is that you get to rename things according to your subjective experience. And before, you would be alienating yourself in a sense by like using such idiosyncratic language. But I think now we're in an interesting position socially, because with social media, you can, there's so much slang now that happens. There's so much like new terms that can be created. So it's almost like these like movements. So language can be reclaimed. You know?
That's right.
But it doesn't, you still won't get to your natural, you can't do it for just the sake of like movement, like work. You really actually have to authentically connect with this thing, and that's
exactly I think, and then I think that's the challenge, you know. I think that's a big challenge when you have such easy and quick solutions, you know, like like we were saying, like why meditate for 15 years, you know, 2 hours a day, when you can take a Xanax and, you know,
be relaxed in 15 minutes.
Yeah, exactly. So in a sense, you know, the Xanax, you know, the pharmaceutical is what we're talking about, you know, in the trans journey, like you can have the pharmaceutical shortcut. But does that actually achieve the same authentic outcome? I don't think so, you know, like Xanax doesn't make us naturally relaxed. You know, so that's the journey is, it takes longer. It just it's gotta take longer, you know. The same way that like the journey of understanding takes longer. So you know, but we live in such a time of such hurry, you know. And we have to constantly prove our value to the world around us, unfortunately, you know, prove our, you know, our identity, and, you know, prove that we are worthy members.
Yes, you should respect me, because I have all these things you can see on my resume.
Right, yeah. Cause
and on my face.
Exactly, exactly. Because I'm doing this, and I'm looking like this, and, so that in fact confuses everybody, you know. So if we're in a time of such change, like, you know, mass social change as a species, And then, you know, we do not give ourselves like time,
Yep,
you know,
exactly.
like to actually, you know, exactly,
Internalize,
yes, internalize, you know, and embody
Yes.
and process all this
Yes.
change, you know,
Yes.
then we're kind of like attacking ourselves, you know, and it
Exactly.
bec and something that is revolutionary in the best sense becomes toxic, you know,
Yes. Something that's
and
sacred be and
right.
yours becomes owned by the
Right.
state, the dominant,
Right.
discourse.
Yes, and once again becomes a form of oppression, right, or
Yes.
exploitation, or so
Yes.
yeah, I mean, and that's the ultimate, in my opinion, you know, personal struggle is to find, you know, to find some sort of balance between that, you know, being being free and being true. They, you know, they are very, you know, like it's very hard to be both. So,
Yes.
you know, I could simplify, I mean, you know, we could like specify that, you know, more, but, you know, basically, you know, being like a member of culture and being a member of nature, you know, being both of those
Yes.
things,
Yeah,
it's,
your nature, your own nature,
yeah,
right?
your own nature, yeah, your
Yes.
own nature, or your own mother nature, you know,
Yes.
so
Yes, I love that. I love
yeah.
that.
Well, nice. Thank you, Frankie.
Anytime.
Yeah, thank you. This was wonderful. So, thanks for opening up and being generous. And everyone out there, thank you for listening. And until next week, keep speaking love and freedom and truth and sex and gender.
Yes, all of them.
Be still, my.